Well, there's a little passage in the Psalms that I read yesterday morning that I'm not even sure if I understand it properly, but it kind of, I've been thinking about it and just sort of connected with a couple other verses in my mind. So I thought I could share a little bit about that and kind of see if it can help us share and discuss together a little bit. Just back up just a little bit to kind of. It sort of has to do with a theme that I feel like I come to quite a bit, which has to do with it's kind of the way the Lord deals with man, the way in his like wisdom and his love and his power he deals with us in different ways. I've said it a bunch of times over the last few years, kind of that. The Lord has really, he's really kind of like dashed my imaginations about what it would be like to know the Lord and follow the Lord, which is a really good thing, you know. But it wasn't, I wasn't expecting it. Kind of dashed my expectations and my imaginations, and it's for that reason, like I often kind of think about the passage of like Naaman, and Jason did like a message just like a couple months ago, I think, about like Naaman, just about how it's like that story of Naaman is like a perfect picture of having to like die to our expectations and let the Lord deal with us in ways that we didn't want, that we didn't expect, that seemed low, that seemed humble, that seemed like the opposite, seemed like they wouldn't work. That he had to do them over and over again. He had to go wash in this river that he kind of despised in his own mind, but he, and he had to do it 7 times. But yet that was the way the Lord, in his power and love and wisdom, knew was right to heal Naaman. But Naaman imagined this, like, you know, yeah, surely he'll stand before me and wave his hand over the spot. And we've talked about that story at length, but I kind of, I frequently have this feeling that for the last like 10 or 12 years or so, I feel like I think many of us sort of feel like the Lord has turned us in a good degree to like the beginning of like a real and substantial way of walking with Him. And I think that I can say that I felt like a real encouragement that there's something real and living and true in this way. And not that we understand it perfectly or are doing things perfectly, or that there's not much to learn and much that we need to be corrected in, but I still feel like a real kind of like substantial encouragement that that we're like roughly facing the right direction and beginning to take some real I think real steps. Which is, at least for me, like I didn't have that feeling for a lot of years, and I've kind of shared my story in bits and pieces many, many times, but I kind of felt like I was doing circles for a long, long time. And so to have a little bit of a sense of like, I think there's something steady and something real. I think we have our faces set towards Zion. We're asking the way. We're turning our way back, or turning our backs on kind of like the things behind us, and learning as like a group to like walk with the Lord in this way. Like that I feel like strongly and real. And then at the same time, I kind of feel this other thing, which is like, wow, there's so many things about this journey that are not what I expected and not what I imagined. And we talk about these things pretty frequently, but just like, you know, feeling weakness, feeling barrenness, feeling kind of like the judgments of the Lord, the corrections of the Lord, feeling Him like humble us and reduce us and allow us to be chastened and feel pain and feel difficulty. Kind of the way he mixes that with encouragement and refreshing is for me, it's just kind of been, it's been, I kind of marvel at it sometimes. And it's for that reason that I look at, there's like a handful of verses. This is not the one in Psalms, but had to put like rhythm in here. Yeah, I read this, I won't read the whole thing again, but like a couple weeks ago, I read in one of the meetings, like Hosea chapter 14. A really interesting passage at the very end of Hosea, but it I'll just read a couple of verses of it. I'm tempted. Like it starts by saying, like, "O Israel, return to the Lord your God, for you have stumbled because of your iniquity. Take words with you and return to the Lord. Say to him, take away all iniquity. Receive us graciously, for we will offer the sacrifice of our lips. Assyria shall not save us. We will not ride on horses." I really like those two phrases. For sure. Like, 'cause I think it just, I think it's pretty clear what I think that's referring to. Just kind of this turning back to the Lord with this sense of like, we've tried Assyria, we've tried horses, we've tried all these things, and it never profited us at all. And kind of like the feeling of that, this turning back to the Lord and saying like, we're done trusting in ourselves, we're done trusting in flesh, we're done trusting in anything else. None of that stuff works. None of that stuff has helped us. So like, anyway, so he says, take words with you. Assyria shall not save us. We will not ride on horses, nor will we say any more to the work of our hands. You are our gods. For in you the fatherless finds mercy. I will heal their backsliding. I will love them freely, for my anger has turned away from him. I will be like the dew to Israel. He shall grow like the lily and lengthen his roots like Lebanon. His branches shall spread, his beauty shall be like an olive tree, and his fragrance like Lebanon. Say, I'm going to read the whole chapter. Those who dwell under his shadow shall return and shall be revived like grain and grow like a vine. Their scent shall be like the wine of Lebanon. And Ephraim shall say, what have I to do anymore with idols? I have heard and observed him. I am like a green cypress tree. Your fruit is found in me. And I kind of read all that. It's great, but just also to kind of get to this last verse where it says, who is wise? Let him understand these things. Who is prudent? Let him know them. For the ways of the Lord are right. The righteous walk in them, but transgressors stumble in them. I like that passage. Like that, it reminds me of this other place in Psalms. Psalm 107. I won't read that whole psalm, but this is this amazing psalm describing like the dealings of the Lord in these kind of unusual and sometimes confusing ways. Like they wandered in a wilderness. They went up and downs on the great waves of the ocean. He brought down their heart with labor and affliction and irons. And he keeps kind of like doing these little vignettes of different ways the Lord deals with the human soul. And it ends again at the very end of that chapter. This is Psalm 108, or sorry, 107, verse 43. It says, whoever is wise will observe these things, and they will understand the loving kindness of the Lord. Just like really interesting, because all the things he described are talking about, like, I'm gonna take like everything that's fruitful and green, and I'm gonna turn it into like a desert for you, or I'm going to cause you to reel to and fro and stagger like a drunken man at your wit's end until you cry out to the Lord in your trouble. It says, like verse 39 says, when they are diminished and brought low through oppression, affliction, and sorrow, he pours contempt on princes. He causes them to wander in the wilderness, yet he sets the poor on high. The righteous will see it and rejoice, and all iniquity will stop its mouth. Whoever is wise will observe these things and understand the loving kindness of the Lord. Like those passages to me seem like really interesting and seem to be these kind of like little hints scattered throughout all scripture that like you probably don't understand the loving kindness of the Lord. You know, like you will probably imagine that the loving kindness of the Lord would be I don't know, bless you inwardly, outwardly, in all the ways that we can think of externally, or all the ways we can spiritualize other things. But we just kind of imagine that. You know, we wouldn't imagine that the Lord would, you know, call Abraham and say, like, I'm gonna bless you and multiply your descendants greatly in the earth, and all the nations of the earth will be blessed in you. And then what happens? Like, years of nothing happening and no kids, and he and his wife just get older and older and older until it's like impossible. Like, wait, I feel like that's a place where the spirit can say, like, whoever is wise will observe these things and understand the loving kindness of the Lord. It is different from what we expect. And that just it feels important to me. I think about the fact that, to me, just kind of like observing the world and observing the people around me over the last couple of decades, it seems like many people don't walk faithfully for years and decades in the true way of the Lord. And I think a part of it is because of our imaginations and our not understanding the loving kindness of the Lord, not being able to like adjust and let him tear down our imaginations and expectations and teach us that there is like goodness and wisdom in him dealing with us in these unusual ways. And so I think for that reason, many people get discouraged. They listen to 1,000 voices saying, that's not the way of the Lord, that the Lord would never want you to feel those things, and the Lord would never oppress you and diminish you and bring you low. So, you know, like what they said to George Fox, take tobacco and sing psalms, you know? And if he had taken that advice, that would have been a terrible thing. But like, and nowadays we say, I don't know, like watch Netflix or something. It's like the something, you know, distract yourself instead of like staying under the loving hand of the Lord for years. So anyway, to me it seems important. And like that, there's verses scattered throughout all the Bible, I think, that kind of, like I said, point to this. It's like, not the Lord wasn't hiding any of this. If we look at the way he deals with just all the types and shadows, all like the picture of Abraham, the picture of Joseph, the picture of David, like name a figure in the Old Testament that is like an illustration for us that didn't pass through periods of like being brought low, being brought down, being humbled, being chased, being nearly killed, being brought to despair, having to suffer. I just remind you, I was reading with my family last night out of the book of Acts, and it was saying, I think it was like a Paul or Apollos or something, and in one place it says like he was like, you know, disputing with the Jews in the synagogue and explaining them to them that the Christ had to suffer and then enter into his glory. I think that's like the phrase it says, like he had to suffer and enter into glory. And I was thinking about like they had this whole other mind, this other picture of what a Messiah was going to be. Like they had imagination of this like prince and king that was going to come in and obviously crush the Romans and set up the kingdom of David and exalt their temple, and just kind of, that was their imagination. And Paul's going around saying, no, the Messiah came. And he was this like humble, forgotten, rejected man of sorrows. And they're going like, whoa, that's definitely not the Messiah. And so like one of the things they did is say like, well, let me show you from like the whole Old Testament that the Christ had to suffer. And that was always that was the process, that was the plan, that was the way of redemption that he was going to give us. But that's not what they, it wasn't, it was there, you know. I think that's why like the Ethiopian sitting there reading Isaiah 53, and the Lord sends Philip to him and said, he says like, how can I understand this? And the Lord opens to him that this is like, this has always been like the heart and purpose and plan of the Lord. But yeah, like that, there's that verse where Paul says, let us not grow weary in doing good. That's just a simple phrase, but I think that, I think kind of like grappling with this and kind of setting our hearts for a real journey setting our hearts for the Lord dealing with us in great love and great mercy, never more than we can handle, never too much for sure, but just kind of like really determining to like lay aside our imaginations and say like, Lord, you know how to do this. You know how much suffering I need. You know how much refreshment I need. You know what seasons to allow me to go through or not to go through. You're the only one that knows how to bring a human soul to where it needs to be. And to really, yeah, just kind of like really seek to make that kind of a purpose of our heart. And when our kind of doubts and fears rise up, to just sort of like kind of try to sink beneath them and trust and hope in the Lord and His goodness. And okay, so kind of coming to the verse in Psalms, let me just kind of mention this first too. Like the thing that it kind of connected to in my heart was that commandment from Deuteronomy. It's quoted in the New Testament. It's so famous and so well known about like, love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. Such an amazing commandment, and such a it's one of those things. It's like that's like a commandment that's sort of like, to me, it's like 1 Corinthians 13. It's like a description of an alien life form. It makes me like I feel just kind of viscerally, experientially that self can't do that. You know, I can't do that. If the Lord isn't like, if the Lord isn't the life and the power and the reality of in that me, that in me, then there's no possibility, you know. But like, what? Nevertheless, it stands there. It remains a commandment. Like, and I believe with all my heart that there's nothing commanded by the Lord that is impossible for us. Even when, you know, when Jesus says, "Be perfect, as your heavenly Father is perfect." Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your strength. And like, that's an incredible thing. And like, it's a, we could talk about that verse just for a long time, I think, but just the intensity of that. And the, like, I've been recently thinking just a little bit about, probably because of like a couple like sentences and a few or one or two George MacDonald books I've been reading with Huckleberry, but he sometimes like references that commandment and says a few words about like the fact that God is like implied in that commandment is something that I think we all would acknowledge. Maybe we don't like think about, but like implied in that commandment is that God is like infinitely lovable. Or infinitely, that's a dumb way to say it. I'm not sure the right way, but just like, that he is like the only object capable of, that he is in a being, an object. I don't know how to, what words to use, but something that can be the, can occupy us entirely with love. And it's just, it's such an interesting, it's like the great, you know, the greatest commandment could have been like obey, and there is a sense when it's all tied together, but like it could have been just this, I'm struggling with words here, but just like it's, I guess won't try to go too far into this, but it's an amazing thing to think of the fact that the God of the universe, what the thing he wants more than anything for us is for us to love him. Not because, obviously not because he needs the, like, our love or wants our love, or wants it in the kind of like needy, selfish way that we sometimes say, you know what I mean? But because like that is, it's almost like that is the state that we fell out of, I think, like to know him and to love him, to have a union and a communion with him where we are completely satisfied in him, absorbed in him, in finding everything that we need and want and desire in him, like infinitely enjoying him. Like think about those pictures in heaven of like the living creatures just constantly night and day crying out, casting their crowns down before him, like as if they're continually amazed and overwhelmed. Like he's a God of infinite loveliness and perfection and purity and holiness and goodness. And when everything is right between the creature and his creator, it looks like love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. And in some ways, I think that should be like an incredible encouragement to us. That's what the Lord is bringing us to. That's the, and love is the thing that remains, the greatest of all of these. The goal of our instruction is love. God is love, you know? And so like it doesn't make it, immediately feel any more within my reach or within the reach of self, but it's like encouraging. I guess that's the kind of thing I'm trying to say. It's like it's interesting and encouraging that that's the what the Lord is like calling us to. And I just say that because to me, it makes a lot of sense. Like, it helps make sense to me of these like mysterious dealings of the Lord. So when I consider like, how do you get a human soul like mine, which is like full of selfishness and full of ego and pride and many things that are wrong and dark? Like, how do you take a human soul and bring it to the place where it loves the Lord its God, his her, I don't know, conjugate that, loves the Lord God with all its heart and soul and mind and strength. Like it's considering things like that that sometimes kind of like give me a little perspective and say like, oh, okay, yeah, it doesn't, I don't think just like a continuous stream of like encouragement and blessing and like ease is actually what's gonna like, it's not gonna do anything. That's just gonna leave us in the state that we are in with like a feeling of blessing. Or if anything, it's gonna probably like increase my like spiritual pride and like, like what's really gonna, like, how do you get a human heart to love the Lord God all its soul and mind and strength? Like, wow, let's consider that for a minute. Maybe that's why the Lord has to like sometimes crush us, sometimes weaken us, diminish us, bring us low, cause us to go up and down on the great waves of the mighty deep, be at our wits' end sometimes, and then bring us to like a safe harbor, or to like absolutely make everything around us from a fertile field into a complete wilderness, and then reverse it back. Like, well, why did like? I think it's because there's this thing that the Lord is trying to do with us in time that is so big and so deep, and he sees it super, super clearly, and we barely see it, and we barely know what the pro what our problem even is, or what kind of things we need to would need to go through in order for him to like work that out in our heart. And Anyway, I guess I just say that because it. There are definitely times where I feel like I need to sort of like step back and kind of like remember the what the Lord is trying to do and kind of get out of the moment, the day, the month, or even the year, and kind of like just remember the living God. A living and eternal, loving and holy and wise God is trying to do something with my soul. And he's trying to bring it into a condition and a state very, very different from where it was when I kind of first began to turn and walk with the Lord. And I need to be patient. I need to not grow weary in this journey. I need to not let my imaginations kind of short circuit everything. And wandering, but okay, so this psalm, so it's like the psalm that kind of got all this going in my mind was Psalm 38-ish, 30, yeah, it was Psalm 30, no, yeah, Psalm 38. Again, I'm not even sure if I know it, especially because there's this verse in here that I, in the New King James, I don't understand what it means. Or it's, I understand the English words, but but I'm going to read it in the New American in a second too, because maybe I'll pick up in like verse 7. It says, "And now, Lord, what do I wait for? My hope is in you. Deliver me from all my transgressions. Do not make me the reproach of the foolish. I was mute. I did not open my mouth because it was you who did it." And he goes on.
Psalm 39.
So did I say the wrong one? I'm sorry. Psalm 39. Okay, yes. Appreciate that. And so these two verses, 10 and 11 in Psalm 39. Should have brought my reading glasses. Remove your plague from me. I am consumed by the blow of your hand. When with rebukes you correct man for iniquity, you make his beauty melt away like a moth. Surely every man is a vapor. I'll just keep reading a little bit further too. Hear my prayer, O Lord, and give ear to my cry. Do not be silent at my tears, for I am a stranger with you, a sojourner as all my fathers were. Remove your gaze from me that I may regain strength before I go away and am no more. It's a strange passage. It's like it reminds me a little bit of Job, to be honest. And there's other psalms that are like this that remove your plague from me. There's a verse I think in Job where he said something like, I forget how he phrases it, but he says like, "You set me up as your target," right? Which makes me kind of think like he's kind of saying like, "Lord, it feels like you're doing target practice with me," you know? That's how I read it. It's in the new Jared version, but it's a weird thing for him to say, and or like, there's multiple places in the Psalms that kind of say like. I go on all day plagued from morning to evening or something like that. So it's this odd thing to say. I'm remove your plague from me. I'm consumed by the blow of your hand. And that verse 11, I was thinking about that yesterday morning. When with rebukes you correct man for iniquity, you make his beauty melt away like a moth. And that's the part, like, I don't understand how beauty could melt away like a moth. Like, I don't think of moths melting very often.
So
But what?
they don't live
They
long.
don't live long. Okay. Yeah. And I think there's like something else about the moth. The moth, like, and that's why I was like remembering. I'm like, I think I remember this verse and I can just read it to you in the New American. And I don't know like which one's better, but I remember liking the New American Standard. It says, "With reproofs, you chasten a man for iniquity. You consume as a moth what is precious to him." That's kind of like it takes a different aspect on it. But in both ways, like, I think. Like moths are like generally like associated with this kind of like the consumption of what is perishable, you know? Or like you said, they don't live very long, or they like moth and rust can destroy this, you know, like and so I'm not sure like which one makes sense, but they both kind of have the same feeling, right? Like if you, like when with rebukes you correct man for iniquity, you make his beauty melt away like a moth, or how did it say? You consume as a moth what is precious to him. And that seemed interesting and kind of like it got me into that little mode of like, wow, Lord, you let like I want to consider this with like a wise heart that this is coming back to like loving the Lord God with all our heart and soul and strength, we are like a land that is like full of other things, you know. That's why the it's so perfect. The picture of the whole Old Testament is kind of like a seed coming into a land full of seven abominably wicked nations, you know. That is like the heart of man. And yet that heart needs to come to love the Lord its God with all its heart, soul, and mind, and strength. And this makes a little sense to me, you know, like why do we have to pass through seasons? It's not always. Why do we sometimes pass through seasons where we feel like you are making me your target and using me as target practice? You remove your plague from me. I'm consumed by the blow of your hand. I think it's because of what he says about this beauty melting away, or that which is precious to us being consumed like a moth. And I don't think that's talking about anything of real, eternal, precious value, right? It's all the things that are in the way. It's everything that filled the land. It's everything that our heart is attached to, all of our hopes and desires and dreams and pleasures in the world. All the things that are standing in the way of loving God. And I think the Lord, in his love and his mercy and kindness, deals with us gently at first, calls, invites. But for many of us, like we don't respond, we don't listen, we don't. I think we could have like an easier, it makes sense to me at least, that we could have a much easier and quicker path in many of these things, but we're stubborn and hard-hearted and stiff-necked. We're just like the Israelites. And so when speaking and encouraging and sending the prophets to rebuke and to reprove doesn't work, in his love and his mercy, he sends judgment. He comes with a plague. He comes with blows of his hand, painful rebukes. And what happens? That's the important part. Like if we let it, it can consume like a moth what is precious to us. It can carve out in us. It can kind of like stain in our vision and view the loveliness of the world. This is kind of what I've felt in a little measure in some of the recent waves I've had, where I've felt a little bit like tempted to say, like, you're doing target practice with me, Lord, is that the world and the things of it just kind of like become stained. A moth comes and eats them away. A moth causes their beauty to melt. And in a very painful and difficult process, I feel a little bit of an ability to begin to say, like, more and more, like, the only thing that makes sense, the only thing that seems real, the only thing that seems like worth living and dying for is to know a real work of God in my soul. And as the like years kind of keep going faster and faster, it seems like, in the weeks and the months just picking up speed, I kind of feel like, Lord, do something in me, even if you have to kind of like treat me like Naaman and give me the exact opposite of what I planned. But like, I don't know that we can love the Lord the way that we should, and the way that would be the greatest joy and peace to our heart, until we let him kind of like pull out of our hands all the stuff that we love, all the stuff that is beautiful to us, all the stuff that's precious to us, everywhere our treasure is. Like, we have to give that up. It's like it's the message of the parable of the pearl is, you can have the pearl, but you can't have anything else. And so I always think about that parable as like, not that it's not even so much as the guy has to go and like, the point isn't like the cost of the pearl. The point is like the cost is the same for everybody. It's everything you have, because you can't have it and anything else, you know? And you cannot love God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength and love the world. You can't do it. But we're in this condition, and how do we get out of it? And I think the answer is like submitting ourselves under his hand, like beginning to reckon with the way in his love and wisdom. What are really the ways of, that's the verse in Hosea I read, the ways of the Lord are righteous. The righteous walk in them. Like Psalm 25, teach me your ways. Psalm 107 is like full of the ways of the Lord, pictures of the ways of the Lord. And the ways of the Lord will at times bring us into seasons, I think, where we kind of sometimes kind of have to say, like, remove your plague from me. But it's very much those, I think it's those times and those seasons where the land is being cleared out and emptied out, and room and space is being made for the seed. It's like we could go back in Hosea and like read the whole passage where it talks about like using, I think, Gomer, the woman, as like this picture of the soul, the people of God, the humanity in every generation as like this adulterous harlot. And the Lord says, like, I'm going to bring you out in the wilderness, and I'm going to hedge up your way with thorns everywhere. That's the love of God. That is the wisdom of God. Those are the ways of God. You could say it in the language of like David or whoever wrote the psalm. I'm going to plague you, and with blows that hurt, I'm going to be like a moth melting away the beauty. I'm gonna all your other lovers, like he uses that language a lot in the beginning of Hosea. Everything you've loved, everything that gave you the new wine and the new grain and the I'm gonna just completely dry it up before you, because that's the place where I open up the door of what does it say, like the door of Achor, the door of, or in the valley of Achor, I open a door of hope, something like that. That's the place. That's the kindness of the Lord, and that's I think it's really, I don't know, maybe this isn't kind of like for everyone, because again, I really believe the fact that like the dealings of the Lord are not only in like the bitter drafts, you know. There is he makes night and day, he makes winter and summer, absolutely, you know. But the encouragement, we don't have any trouble with the encouraging times, you know, like those make a lot of sense to us. We feel like we deserve those, you know. But it's the times where we go through painful times, the times when our Christianity is making us weaker and making us lower and diminishing us and making us more confused instead of giving us answers, that I think we're tempted sometimes to despair. Yeah, where we're there's that. Oh, no problem.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I was just, this stuff's really good. I was hoping my mom was going
Oh, shit.
to
No worries.
So I apologize for that.
Truly, I was literally like, I think about three sentences from being done. So, I just kind of was saying that I think those are the things that where we have to like take heart and not grow weary in doing good. That's why like James recommends the example of like Job to us and says like take Job and the prophets as examples of suffering and patience. The farmer doesn't like reap immediately. He waits patiently for the early and the latter rains. I'm like, we could spend the next 20 minutes just kind of like citing verses that kind of keep saying the things, the thing that's in my heart is let's believe those things. Let's trust in his wisdom. Let's like set our hearts to get under the forming hand of the Lord, and let's try to set our view above on the like what he's trying to do with human souls. Let's be like encouraged and excited about the fact that if we follow him in this way, we are going to love with all our heart and soul and mind and strength. That's where he's bringing us. It's like an eternity of loving and enjoying God in purity and holiness. What is not worth that? You know, like what pains, what difficulties? That's the thing I think that made Paul say, like, oh, these light and momentary afflictions aren't even worth being compared to the glory that's going to be revealed to us. I think we need sometimes to kind of remind each other of those things and sort of feel those things so that we can spend the next 5 years being faithful and not turn away, not lose our way, not take an exit ramp when things feel hard, but just kind of like settle in and hope in the Lord and hope in his mercy. I guess only that we can.